That's right.
Right.
Slide one, please.
Oh. Yeah, slide one if you can. And the first reading is from Acts chapter 9, verses 36 to 42. In Joppa there was a disciple named Tabitha, whose name translates as Dorcas. She was full of good works and generous deeds. Around that time she fell ill and died. They washed her and laid her in an upper room. Lydda is near Joppa. And the disciples, hearing that Peter was there, sent two men to him with the urgent request that he shouldn't delay, but come to them at once. So Peter got up and went with them. When he arrived, they took him to the upper room, where all the widows were weeping. They showed him the tunics and the other clothes that Dorcas had made while she was with them. Peter requested them all to leave. Then he knelt down and prayed and turned to the body. Tabitha, he said, get up. She opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. He gave her his hand and lifted her up. Then he called God's people, including the widows, and presented her alive. This became known throughout the whole of Joppa, and many believed in the Lord.
Thank you.
There you go.
I read in the Bible about things like this, a miracle, it really, really, really inspires me and really, really encourages me. And the first thing I want to say before I start preaching is let's remember that this Peter, who has just done this miraculous miracle, is the same Peter who we know who made all of the mistakes that he made. He denied Jesus, he walked on water and then lost his faith. It's this same Peter, this Peter who failed but who Jesus loved. And so let's just remember that it's this wonderful man Peter who I really love, because in some ways he's very similar to me. You know, he jumps in and then suddenly thinks, why am I doing this, or says the wrong things. So what I want to talk about this morning is miracles, and I've got a number of questions that I'm wanting to ask you and ask myself. And if I could ask Carl to put the next slide up, that would be lovely, please. What I want to look at through this talk is, the first question is, do miracles happen in your life? Why do miracles occur? Do we ask for miracles? Do we expect them to happen? Why do miracles not always happen? Do we recognise miracles in our lives and those of others? And what do we need to do to see miracles happening more around us or at all? So I want to start off by just asking you to think about for a few minutes, do miracles happen in your lives? You don't need to share with anybody else, but just think, do they happen in your lives? That's good. That's good. And through the Bible, we see miracles happening, don't we? Creation was a miracle. You know, we see the dividing of the Red Sea. We see Joseph surviving the whale. We see Jonah emerging from the whale. We see the birth of Jesus, this virgin birth. We see the resurrection. We see the feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000. We see Peter walking on water. When Jesus walking on water, we see the rising from the dead of Lazarus, and as we've heard this morning with, you know, and Jairus' daughter. And we see multiple healings. We see lots and lots through the Bible. But in actual fact, the total number that we see of great miracles are quite small when you look at the span of the time the Bible covers. But I suspect that there were also lots and lots of little miracles that were happening throughout the time of the Bible, as there are today, but that they weren't recorded. So my first question to myself and to you is, why do miracles occur? What is the purpose of a miracle? And I would suggest to you that the purpose of a miracle is because God wants to use it to demonstrate his power, his love, his compassion, and sometimes in order to fulfill a purpose that he has. So I would suggest to you that the reason why Dorcas was raised was because Jesus needed to use that rising from the dead to demonstrate to the people who he was. And as we know from the reading, if you could go back to the previous slide, please come. It says the final verses, this became known throughout the whole of Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. So as a result of this, many people recognized who God was, and many people became believers. The second reading today comes from John. And if I could have the third slide, please. Thank you, Carl. And as you can see, the Judeans surrounded him. How much longer are you going to keep us in suspense, they asked. If you're the Messiah, say so loudly. I tell you, replied Jesus, and you don't believe. The works which I am doing in my Father's name give evidence about me. But you don't believe, because you don't belong to my sheep. My sheep hear my voice. I know them, and they follow me. Again, this is evidence. It says here, I'm doing what I'm doing in my Father's name. So this is really the answer to why we see miracles. So there are means by which God can demonstrate who he is to people at a time when he needs to. So this is clearly why we don't see miracles happening all the time and whenever we ask for them, because God uses them when he needs to use them to show who he is. So my next question really is, do you and do I ask for miracles? How often in our lives do we sit down and have a quiet time with God? Some of us would call it praying, some of us might call it talking, some of us might call it pleading. But asking God for the things that we want, for our family, for our friends, for the world that we live in, and for ourselves. Because what we're actually often asking for is for a miracle to take place. So how often do we do that? Let's remember that in the Acts reading, the disciples know that Dorcas has died. And what do? They send for Peter. Now, I'm not sure when they sent for Peter, they had any idea what he was going to do. I don't know whether they believed that he would be able to raise Dorcas from the dead. They knew Peter was a strong Christian man. They knew he was a believer. But I don't know what way. It doesn't say when they sent for him what they wanted him to do. Did they want him to do the burial? Did they want him to spend time with the weeping widows? It doesn't say. But they sent for him. They sought him. And of course, Peter, whatever he was doing at that time, wherever he was going, when he gets asked by the disciples to come, he comes. He lays down whatever he's doing and he goes. Now again, I'm not sure when he got there what he thought he was going to do. And I wonder whether it was God that said to him, you need to tell Tabitha to get up. I don't know, it doesn't say that. But he does. So in response to this urgent request from the disciples, it says, come at once, they asked him. He's gone. Now I wonder whether the widows or the disciples or even Peter had expected a miracle to happen. We don't know. All we know is it did. Because the disciples did what they had to do, Peter did what he had to do, and God did this miracle. And as we know, as a result of that, a lot of people came to the Lord. So this really leads me on to the next question, which for many years and still is to some extent a real problem for me. Why do miracles not happen? Why is it that if I believe for something and want something and do everything I can do it as a Christian. Sometimes the things that I believe for, I ask, don't happen. Is it because I don't have enough faith? Is it because I'm not doing it right? It's none of those things. And I'll explain that to you later on, because I'm going to tell you a story later on of part of my learning. It's none of those things. The reality is, it doesn't happen because it's not God's will. It's not part of God's complex plan that I don't understand, and I'm sure none of you understand. God knows what needs to happen and what doesn't need to happen. And so these things only happen when they fit into God's plan. And the reality is, if everything we asked for, we got, I suspect that everybody in the world would want to be a Christian. Because if you pray for something and you get it, then I'll join the club. And that, of course, is the wrong reason. Well, that's the truth. It sounds quite simple, but it's true. If I became a Christian and if I ask for something, I get it, well, then everybody will join. Everybody will join. So my question really is, if when some of you reflecting on whether miracles happen in your life, you said they do, do you see all the miracles? Or are some of them obscured from you? And for those of you who might have thought, well, actually miracles don't happen at all in my life, is it just that you're not seeing them?
Most of the time I don't see a miracle until later on.
That's right.
And then I realise that was God.
That's right. Thank you for that. That's lovely. Yeah. And I think sometimes they're obvious, or as you say, sometimes they're obvious later. Sometimes they're unseen because some people would say, well, it's just a coincidence. You know, you were praying about it and it happened, but it was happening. It would happen anyway. I mean, I give you an example. A lot of people were praying yesterday for your wedding that the sun would be shining, and the sun shone. Now, people could say, well, the sun was going to shine anyway, you know, so it was an answer to prayer. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. And people might well say, well, actually, the sun was going to come out anyway. It wasn't an answer to prayer. But actually, and I can't remember which bishop used to say this, but somebody used to say, when I pray, coincidences happen. When I stop praying, the coincidences stop. Yeah? And so, you know, people will argue with you in life, well, actually, you know, that was always going to happen. But actually, that may not be true. It may well be an answer to prayer. And sometimes there are situations when, and I'm going to give you an example in a moment, where a miracle has happened, but you will never know about it. You did something in your life, but you will never know. And what I want to do, if I can, is just use a few examples from my own life around miracles that I've seen. And thank you for what you said, because I'm going to talk about one of those in a moment. But the first one, with the permission of Craig, is, and some of you will know about this already, is I want to reflect just a little bit on the miracle that Craig experienced just over a year ago. Those of you that were...
8th of July.
Last year, yeah. Those of you that were there on Good Friday and those of you that were at the wedding yesterday will know that Craig had a rocky many years of his life. And last year came to the Lord, and one of the first things he asked the Lord was that he would like to be able to read, because he wanted to read the Bible, he wanted to learn about God. And you had the challenge for many years, hadn't you, Craig, in reading? A couple of days later, without having to go to see anybody to help him, Craig can read. That is a miracle. That is an answer. That is an answer to prayer. That is a miracle. Yeah. Yeah. You can, yeah.
When I come to my faith, I was expecting big things to happen. Just that one thing happened. The big spirit through the faith already. I mean, nothing can touch my faith now. That's how I say it.
And that's real, like you said, that's God.
It's real stuff.
That's right, yeah.
So. It's not like and I'm that's expecting much. I wasn't asking like superpowers to blow people out.
No, but Craig, what you were asking for is what you needed.
I know, I would have probably got it as well, but I just wanted to read the things of that.
Don't push it out.
And it's all he's done, it's given me my confidence I've never had over the years. Everything, it's not just that one miracle we've had a read, it's given me a lot of stuff that I've never had growing up.
That's right. And that encouraged you, Craig, but what you don't know is how many other people that miracle has affected. You don't know. You know close family and friends, but there may be people who you don't even know about that story, but it's affected them. And you'll probably never know that. But God did that for a reason. A good reason. First, it blessed you, but it also blessed him and lots of other people. Now, there's two stories here, and these were quite risky prayers. The first one, I have somebody I used to work with who was an adiv, you know, there is no such thing as God, don't believe in God, you know, all of these things, very, really quite against anything religious. Gordon and I went to her wedding, when she was in a small hotel in the countryside. And the plan of the day was that all the pictures after the civil service were to be in this beautiful garden, and the reception was in this beautiful garden. The morning of the wedding, it is torrential rain. You've never seen rain like it. And of course, she was absolutely devastated. And Gordon and I, after breakfast, were sitting in her room while she was beginning to get ready, not undressed, but getting ready. And she was, Gordon left before she got undressed. But we were sitting in her room, and she was saying, you know, look at this, I've all these plans and all this, and it's not going to work. And what felt at the time really quite stupidly, and I can't remember if it was me or Gordon that started it, but one of us did, and we said, it's all right, we'll pray about it. And she said, oh, that'll be lovely. And then after we'd left, we both said to each other, we'll pray, let's hope this works. And the rain is still coming down and it's black. And her wedding was at 2 o'clock, and at about 12:30 the rain stopped, the sun came out, and by the end of the wedding the grass was dry, the gardens were dry, the path was dry, and it was glorious sunshine. And to this day, if I'm ever anywhere with Susie and she talks about her wedding, she always says, on the day of my wedding, Karen and Gordon prayed that the weather would change. And it did. She's never acknowledged it's God, but she always tells people that Karen and Gordon prayed and the rain stopped. And again, that was a miracle. Gordon out with street pastors. a similar risky prayer. The way things run in Maidstone is if the clubs have a lot of men in them and not enough women, they won't let men in. So there's a limit. You have to have a number of women in there before the men can go in. Strawberry Moons, when it was there, it was a really horrible, cold, rainy night. Gordon and the team had walked down to Strawberry Moons, and there was a group of men standing outside the door, really quite unhappy. And they were asked, you know, are you all right? Yes, we're fine. We just can't go in because there aren't enough women in there. So they prayed, shall we pray for you? And these boys said, well, if you want to, you can, you know, but, you know, we want to get in the club. So they prayed, and a large group of women, a hen party, came down the road, went into Strawberry Moons, and of course the boys were let in. And again, we don't know, but I suspect that they will talk to other people and say, you know, those weird people, those street passers, they prayed for us and we got into the club. Again, we don't know what came out of that. And some people would say, well, it was a coincidence, you know, the rain was going to stop that day for your friend's wedding. Those girls were going to come down anyway, but there was prayer there. They were, in my view, they were miracles. And when the Detling conference was on, Gordon and I were on the prayer team, and this is encouragement for us all, because I have to be honest here, we were on one of the healing afternoons, and this lady came to us and we asked her, you know, what would you like healing for? And she said, paraphrasing, before I start, I need to tell you, I've had prayer for this before and it doesn't work. So I'm thinking, oh, this is encouraging. This will go well. So she explained she got arthritis in her hand and she couldn't move her hand, and she'd had prayer before, but she was here and this was going on. So she was her thumbs, wasn't it? So she'd turn up anyway, but she made it very clear nothing's going to happen because, you know, it never happened before. So we prayed for her and nothing happened. But the year after, we were at the conference and she came up to both of us and said, a couple of weeks later after you prayed for me, my arthritis has gone. So my encouragement here is that when you think that a miracle might not happen or somebody tells you it isn't going to happen, don't be put off. Because as I said earlier on, it's about God, it's God's will. And I suspect he was teaching her a lesson. He was also teaching me a lesson and Gordon a lesson. Because when she kept saying it isn't going to happen, I'm beginning to think, well, of course it's not. But of course, God had other ideas. And coming back to what you were saying, Craig, this next example is not just for you, but it's a warning. There was a man who used to come to Detling who was a very, 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 very introverted man. And he came to prayer, I'm not guilty of this, if for Gordon, and said he'd like some prayer, because he'd like to be released from being so introvert and he wanted confidence. The next year, he is standing up in the services, shouting to the Lord. He is the most extrovert man we have ever seen. So be careful what you ask for and be careful what you pray for. Okay? But he went from that end of introversy to that end of being a real extrovert, to the point where sometimes he would annoy some people because they'd be thinking, sit down. But it was an answer to prayer. That's what he wanted. He was a man who just, he couldn't pray aloud. He was afraid to go to church. church because he felt so, so restricted. Now my story about something you may never know of. Gordon and I were in Mexico, in Kenya, with Church Army Africa a couple of years ago. And the CEO of Church Army UK was there and was speaking to some of the people training in Theology College and told them a story. Church Army UK had spent more money than it had because there were a number of things that needed to be done in this country. And so the trustees, whatever, I don't know whether they're called trustees, but the people on the board had decided that this money needed to be spent. So consequently, they now have a large amount of money that they need to find from somewhere. And on this particular morning, a cheque came through the post for a very substantially large amount of money, an answer to prayer. That's the first thing. They'd been praying, this is a miracle, this money has come from somewhere to answer their debt problems, and actually gave them much more money now to spend than they thought they had. So Mark, who is the chair of Church Army UK, has a practice that if anybody donates anything, he sends a letter saying thank you. So he thought it'll be one of our major donors, so we'll find this person really easily. Couldn't find this man who donated the money anywhere. So decided he still felt he should send the letter, and found out from the source of the cheque that it was a man who had died and it was in his will. So he thought, well, I'll go to the solicitor. So he went to this man's solicitor and said, you know, could you give me details of this man's family, because we'd like to send a thank you letter. And the solicitor said, well, there isn't anybody. This man was the most miserable, unpleasant man I've ever known. He had no friends, he had no family, he had nobody. He was just a very, very, very nasty man. And he said, I got involved in with him because he had become terminally ill and he hadn't got a will. And so as his lawyer, I was trying to convince him that he needed to write a will. He needed to leave his vast fortune somewhere. He was very reluctant to write the will because this man said, well, you know, I've got no one to leave it to. But it was only when the solicitor explained to him that if you don't make a will, your money will be left to the government. And at that time it was a Labour government, and that's the last thing he wanted, that he thought, well, actually, I need to think of something. So the solicitor had said to him, think about this overnight and I'll come back in the morning and we'll see whether or not you've thought of anybody or anything, any organisation you can leave your money to. Came back the next morning and said to him, how have you got on? And he said, I've sorted it. I'm leaving it to Church Army UK and Salvation Army. So the solicitor thought, it's very odd. You know, so he said to him, well, why did you make this decision? And he said, well, when I came out of the army at the end of the Second World War, I had nothing, just a demob suit. And Church Army UK put me up in a residence for a number of weeks. They clothed me, they fed me, and they cared for me. And I was quite an unpleasant person, but they looked after me and they loved me. And when I left there, Sally Army looked after me. He said, so I thought about that last night, and I thought, those are the people that I'd like to give my money to. And the solicitor thought, yippee, we can write the will. He said, but also I have to tell you that when I was thinking last night about where to leave the money, I went onto the Church Army UK website just to see what they were doing, and I listened to a few of the recordings on there. He said, and while I was doing that, I came to the Lord. Now, the reality is, the person who made that piece on the website may never know about him. And those people at the end of the Second World War who looked after him will never know what their actions led to. But without them, he would never have come to the Lord. Because at the end of his life, he had nobody. But they will never know. And there's a lesson there for all of us, I think. Sometimes we do things for people or you say things to people and you think it's had no effect. You don't know. And as I said earlier on, it's in God's time, it's God's will, it's God's plan. So it may be, as Craig says, and as Marie said, it's not now, it's later on. Some of you will know that I do some work at the Living Well in Canterbury, and I have to say, I do some of the deeper healing days, and I've seen miracles there. I won't share any details with you of anything, but I can tell you that I have, every time I do a deeper healing day, a number of people will arrive in the morning, and when they leave at the end of the day, having been listened to, having been prayed for, having been shown love, having been shown a non-judgmental attitude, having been promised confidentiality, they all have left different people, dramatically different people. Again, miracle. You can't explain that to anybody, and many of them are still on a healing path, but they are different people from the people that walked in the morning. Many of them even look different, if you can understand that. My final story, because you're probably getting bored with the stories by now, is one I'm probably going to have difficulty in telling you, and I'm sorry if I get emotional. I had probably my best friend 10 or so years ago contracted cancer. And me and lots of other people prayed for her. I believed for her healing. It was going to happen. You know, there was no doubt in my mind it was going to happen. We did all the things that we could have possibly done. And she wasn't healed. And I was angry. I was questioning myself. I was angry with God. I had some very, very, very long, quite aggressive conversations with God about it. I pleaded with him. I did all of the things that many of you have probably done. I did them all. But the week that Beverly died was, and it's an example of what you were just saying, it's, you don't recognise it till afterwards. Gordon and I were at a service in a church in Maidstone on a Monday night. And on the Tuesday morning, Beverly's brother rang me and said, "You didn't answer our call last night." And I said, "What call?" And he said, "We rang you." And I said, "No, you didn't. There's nothing on our answering machine, neither of our mobile phones. You didn't ring us." "Yes, I did," he said. "I rang you last night because Beverly's abdomen had split open and we thought she was going to die last night." And I said, "All right." I said, so what's happened?" And he said, "Well, she's fine this morning." And so we said, "Would it be all right if we came and visited her today?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, that'll be fine." So we drove to the hospice. And when we arrived there, there were lots of other friends. And Beverly is sitting up in bed, laughing and joking. She's got a chocolate fountain running. There's bottles of sparkling wine. There's this picture frame that we all had to draw on because the hospice chaplain had come and asked her. Beverly was a bit of a laugh, really. He'd asked her, "Do you draw?" And she'd said, "Oh, yes, I do." So he'd bought her this easel, but she couldn't draw for toffee. So she's saying to us all, "You'll have to draw on it, because when he comes, he's going to want to see what I've done." But we had, Gordon and myself and many of Beverly's close friends, had about 5 or 6 hours at the hospice, and it was as though she wasn't ill. We had a really good time. She acknowledged that she wouldn't be at her own funeral, so we, this poor man who could only just learn to play the guitar had to play all the songs so that she could sing them. And he kept saying, "I can't play the guitar," and Beverly was saying, "Just do your best." The following day, some other people came and they had a sherry party with Beverly. And then she became unconscious on Thursday morning, died on Sunday afternoon. And it's as you say, Marie, at the time, couldn't make any sense of this. You know, this miracle should have happened. She wasn't old enough to die. There were so many other things she needed to do. But it was only a while later that I looked back and thought that Tuesday and that Wednesday, they were miracle days. Because Beverly should have died on the Monday night. But we had Tuesday with her, we had Wednesday with her. And all of the people that wanted to be there were there. You know, again, it was a miracle. And it took me a while.
A few weeks ago, my father was in hospital. He was given 30% chance to live.
Yeah.
And me and the family all prayed for him, and he got the miracle.
Yeah.
Finally at home now.
Yeah. That's right. And that was part of me learning and what I was talking about earlier on. Beverly, the reason Beverly didn't survive the cancer was because it wasn't part of God's will. I don't know why, and I still ask those questions, but nobody seems to be able to answer them, because as I said, I think God's plan is so complex, only God really understands it. It just wasn't his will, so it wasn't going to happen. But at the end of her life, miracles took place. We had time with her. So really, moving on to my next question was, what do I have to do to see miracles happen? Because I think that's what's important. If we want to see miracles in the world, if we want to see God lifted up, if we want to see other people see who God is, God's power, God's love and God's compassion, the reality is in the same way as Peter and the disciples had to take action, we have to take action. And what I would suggest to you is that probably one of the biggest miracles there is in the world is that of love. The love that God has for us, which many of us in this world, many people in this world know nothing of. The love that we have for other people, and also something that we often don't recognise or don't think about, the love we have for ourselves. And that's about the good news. Sorry, I've lost my papers. One second, here we are. So I think myself trying to answer the question, what do I have to do to see more miracles happening in my life? I think it's about recognising that actually if the majority of miracles are going to happen in this world, I have a part in that. It's about me remembering that it's God who brings about the miracles, but if he wants to bring them about, I'm his hands, I'm his feet, I'm his heart, I'm his compassion, and I'm his unconditional love in this world, as you all are. So if we want to see miracles, the majority of them will only take place if we're available, like Peter was. As we saw, Peter was obviously doing something, but he laid that down and he went because he was called. Now, some of us might be saying, well, you know, that's all well and good, but I have a busy life. I've got family, I've got friends, I've got commitments. So did Peter. And it's God's work we're doing. The next thing is, making ourselves available is important, and for many of us it's a challenge. But in doing that, we also need to be willing to listen and to hear what God is saying to us. Because, I'm speaking for myself now, it's so easy to decide, well, I know what the answer to this is, so I'll go and do it, or I'll go and help that person to do it. But in actual fact, it's about listening to God. That's what Peter did. That's what the disciples did. And then it's being willing to share God's love, God's compassion and God's care with the people who need it, and including ourselves. So if we went back to the, can I go back to the John reading, please? It says there at the bottom, my sheep hear my voice, I know them and they follow me. That's why Peter was able to do what Peter did, because Peter knew the Father's voice. The Father knew him, and he did what he was told to do. So the question really is, are we doing that? And so let's think of some ways that we might reach out in the world in order to see more miracles. And when I talk about miracles, it's not about us saying, well, we were part of that. It's not about somebody saying, well, as a result of this person was whatever, healed or whatever. That's wonderful. But it's about God's power being shown, God's love being shown. For some people, as I alluded to at the very beginning, just hearing the good news is the only miracle they need. Craig, look at Craig. You know, he is an example of that. He became a Christian and he's a different man. That's a miracle. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you'll see miracles. For some people, it's prayer. They need someone to pray for them. Some people need a listening ear. Some people may just need help with their lawn being mowed. Some people might want to volunteer to be a street pastor or work at the night shelter. Some family or some individual may need a meal cooked. Somebody may need a lift to the hospital. Somebody may need to be visited in a hospital. So perhaps somebody thinks, well, actually, I could easily be a hospital visitor. Perhaps very close to here at Christchurch, Gordon and I have done some services at that church and had some contact with other people here. There are lots of young mothers that live at Christchurch who are unsure, they're anxious, they're afraid, they don't, you know, they feel they just need help. Perhaps, you know, some of us could just help those, particularly those of us who have brought our own children up or grandparents, who could just give them the reassurance. Perhaps somebody, an elderly person, needs some shopping done for them. Perhaps somebody in a local nursing home needs to be visited. All of those things are things that we could be doing And as a result of them, miracles will happen, whether we know about them or not, whether they're obvious or not, whether they become obvious later or not, they will happen. And the other thing I think that we need to think about is, in order for us to do this, we ourselves need to be able to do that. So it's about us looking at ourselves and deciding, is there anything in me that's blocking me? Alan talked a few weeks ago about deeper healing. And it's about recognizing in ourselves what it is that we may need prayer for ourselves or help with, so that we can be, so we can function better. Because for many of us, you know, we look for healing because we've got a, you know, a bad knee or a bad head or a bad whatever. But for many of us, the things that hold us back are the things inside of us, the untrue whispers we've had from other people in life or from the devil, or our insecurities that just need to be taken away. So in order for us to see miracles, we need to be functioning individuals. So we need to love ourselves as well. And if there are things about ourselves we can't love, then we need to find ways of dealing with those. So what I'm really trying to say to you is that God will always do his bit. He's always there. He's always ready. But if he's going to do miracles through us, we need to do our bit. As I've said, Peter did. He gave up whatever he was doing. You know, and if any of you are sitting here thinking, well, actually, you know, that's fine, but I'm not good enough for this, spend some time reading about Simon Peter. You know, if anybody could mess it up, Simon Peter could. You know, he was quite good at it. Saying the wrong things, doing the wrong things, being in the wrong places or in the right places and not saying the right things. And Peter raised Dorcas from the dead. So if Peter can do it, anybody can do it, if you're doing it with not raising people from the dead, because that doesn't happen all the time. But we can, God can use us for miracles. He may raise someone from the dead through you, who knows? But actually, God will use you to bring about miracles if you're available to him. So do not believe that you are not good enough. You don't have the skills, you don't have the gifts, you don't have. Because God will use you. You just have to be open and you have to be available. So what I would suggest to you is that we don't need, that what we need to do in life is to seek to fill people with God, not necessarily to fill church buildings with people. That might be quite controversial, but that's the truth. The church is not the building. The church is the world. So what we need to be doing is to fill people with God. And the way we do that is by loving them, by being out there with them, and we will see miracles. Yeah. Yeah, thank you. And from the Bible, Luke 8, verse 16, no one lights a lamp and hides it in a clay jar or puts it under a bed. Instead, they put it on the stands so that those who come can see the light. We are all the light, and we need to be out there shining in the world. We need to go out there loving people, showing God's compassion, and waiting for the miracles to happen. And my final statement really is that when you see them, we need to thank God for them. And that's something I know myself I'm not often very good at. It may be that, as he said, you see the miracle later on. You can thank him later on. It may be that you hear about miracles that other people have done. Thank him for them. So that's my close, really. And I'm going to ask Phil to come in a moment.
What you've said today has been fantastic.
Thank you.
Can I add a little something?
You can, yes.
Okay, because it's about you.
All right.
Yeah. A few weeks ago, Karen said to me, Phil, I really want to see more healing happen in the church. Yeah, in the body. And I said, okay, what we need to do is you need to find some other people that you can come alongside you so that you can share your experience and your knowledge, your understanding of what God is doing in the world of healing, and actually help them to grow and be better at it themselves. Yeah, do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. So, do you remember a few weeks ago I spoke about the importance of disciples who make disciples? Yeah, that actually how important it is that we look for other people. And so what I'm saying is actually after your word this morning, I hope that will be an encouragement to people to actually, if you are someone who is interested in learning more about the healing ministry, about growing in understanding how God works in miracles, to actually come and talk to Karen.
Yes.
Actually work with Karen, spend time with her, listen to her, pray for miracles with her. and then she'll send you out to go and pray for miracles yourselves.
That's right.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what I want to say. Because, I mean, I know that Mikey, for example, has been working with Michael on the worship leading. And you were with, you worked together, didn't you, the other day? A bit of an apprenticeship model, so that the two of them worked together.
Yeah.
And that was really good. And that.
Yeah.
And many people have been taking up what I've been saying about discipling each other, okay? Because as you disciple each other, you're the easy people to disciple because you're already on the journey. It becomes a little bit harder when you're actually looking to disciple people who haven't yet actually taken some steps into the kingdom. Yeah? But that, but Jesus, remember the disciples actually weren't Christians when Jesus called them. Yeah, and he worked with them over 3 years, helping them to become people like Peter, who was then able to step out. And if you think about the miracle that you spoke about today,
yeah,
do you remember the story of Jesus with Jairus' daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah? When Jesus went in to pray for Jairus' daughter, he sent out all the people who were weeping and wailing, but kept with him Peter and John. And he showed them what to do. He prayed with Jairus' daughter and raised her up. And so here we see in the book of Acts, a year or two later, that here is Peter doing the same thing that Jesus did, except the only thing we don't see is who Peter was discipling at the time.
That's right.
Yeah. But the principle, you learn, you watch what someone does it, and then you do it yourself.
That's right.
And so I'm inviting people to come and work with Karen.
Thank you.
Yeah. And learn about how to pray for healing and for miracles. There you go.
Thank you. And I'll just add to that, I'm only, the understanding I have at the moment and the experience I have at the moment, I only have because I did an ALM course, which is a course at the church office, in healing and wholeness. And while I was doing that, two people decided that they would like to work with me. I didn't realise they had. They just started to invite me along to the Living Well, and then, would you like to do this and would you like to do that? And they worked alongside me, and that's why I have the knowledge that I have at the moment. I didn't even realise it was happening, to be honest. So people ask me, how did you get involved with the Living Well? And I have to say, I haven't got a clue. I just sort of arrived there. It just happened. So just to close, as you all know, if anybody would like prayer at the end of the service, it is available in the corner. I'd like to invite my others to do the closing blessing, please. Thank you.
You've got something.